the oldest member.
Listen to the tale of a stalwart male who lost his well-known nanny. Donald was his name, and golf was the game that made him gray like his granny. He practiced much.
Maurice Denham, as the oldest member, tells another tale by P.G. Woodhouse. Today, there's always golf.
In the locker room every night, he'd sing of his awful plight. Oh, the dirty little Bill went rolling down the hill and rolled right.
Friars Heath Golf Club in the 30s. Excitement is in the air, for it's the day of the mixed foursome cup. The oldest member has his friend, Basil Wagstaff, staying for the weekend. And together they have strolled across to observe events. Wagstaff gasps with admiration. He is clearly impressed by the young woman who has just teed up. She has a sort of queenly air.
That's a jolly handsome woman.
Mrs. Pym, yes, she's very much admired in our little circle. Well, half expects the caddy to go down on one knee.
The face seems oddly familiar. I seem to have seen it before somewhere.
No doubt in the newspapers. As Clarice Fitch. Oh, she was a good deal in the public eye.
Good Lord! You mean the girl who used to fly across oceans and things? And cross Africa on foot and whatnot?
Precisely. She's now Mrs. Ernest Pym.
Well, I never. She looks like Cleopatra to me.
Yes, it is the sort of bosom where an asp could feel at home.
And who's the little man going up to speak to her?
That's Ernest Pym, her husband.
Her husband? Amazing. She looks as if she could eat him for breakfast.
Well, let us walk a little closer, and we may hear their conversation.
Not the driver, darling.
Oh, darling.
No, darling. You know how shaky you are with the wood. Take your iron, darling.
Must I, darling?
Yes, darling.
Very well. You know best, darling.
This exchange has given the friends much to talk about. But talking is best done with a glass in the hand. So they now repair to the clubhouse terrace, where Wagstaff sits, quietly boggling.
You look surprised, Basil. Rather like a fish I once caught off Brighton Pier.
Well, it's astounding. If you told me that a girl like that would respond to criticism by cooing meekly, well, I'd have laughed in your face.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't mention it.
I mean, if ever a wife was cut out to be the boss.
Yeah, quite. But I assure you that since they came together, it's Ernest Pym who's ruled the roost.
What is he, a lion tamer?
Oh, no, he's an average adjuster.
Good at his job?
Oh, apparently. I'm told he'll adjust your beautiful average at the drop of a balance sheet. But his true calling is golf, and it was at this club that they met.
Is that so? Was it love at first sight?
Oh, by no means. Do you believe in Providence, old chap?
Well, up to a point. Nothing fancy, of course.
I believe there is a Providence which watches over all true golfers. And nowhere is its hand more clearly seen than in the case of Clarice Fitch and Ernest Pym. Have another glass of wine and I'll tell you about it. It's perhaps 2 years since Clarice Fitch joined this club as a social member. She was spending the summer with a local aunt while waiting for her new aeroplane to be built. Her arrival had a startling effect on all our young males. Chaps who'd played for years in baggy mud-stained flannels now rushed off to their tailors in search of form-fitting suits of plus fours. Moustaches were curled, ties straightened, and shoes cleaned that hadn't been cleaned for years. Now, of all those stunned by the onset of Clarice Fitch, none was more awestruck than Ernest Faraday Pym. Within hours of meeting her, he'd shaved for the second time that day, put on a clean collar, and started reading love sonnets. I ran into him at the chemist's, where he was buying Sticco, a preparation for smoothing the hair and giving it a brilliant gloss. He further inquired if the chemist knew of something to remove freckles. But neither he nor any of the other suitors made the slightest headway with their goddess. In my capacity as oldest inhabitant, I enjoyed several conversations with her. But for the younger men of Prior's Heath, she had no time at all. Ernest Pym was worst affected, and in due course he came, as they all do eventually, to consult me.
I tell you, I can't eat, and I can't sleep. This unrequited passion is beginning to affect my work.
Oh, indeed? Oh, that's serious.
It's true. Sometimes in my office, as I start to adjust an average, her face comes between me and it, and I adjust it all crooked. You seem to know the lady. What can I do to make her return my love?
Oh, well, there is no easy answer, but having spoken at length with Miss Fitch, I can offer a few guidelines.
Oh, please, please. Anything you can tell me.
Well, what none of you young chaps seem to realize is that Clarice Fitch is essentially a romantic girl. That's why she crosses Africa on foot, where it'd be much cheaper and easier by train.
Yes, yes, I understand. She's a romantic.
And being a romantic, she demands a romantic lover.
I sent her flowers.
No, that's the wrong sort of romantic, dear boy. And the trouble is you, like all the rest, cringe before her. That's not what she wants. She wants someone strong and masterful.
Strong and masterful?
She compares you unfavorably with a man like Magoopy Magwumpy.
Oh, a man like... What was the name again?
Magoopy Magwumpy.
Ah,
the chief of the Magwumpy tribe.
Hmm.
He made a deep impression on Miss Fitch. Indeed, I think something might have come of it had he not already got 27 wives and 100 spares.
Oh, that's outrageous.
Oh, possibly, but that's the kind of forceful personality Miss Fitch is seeking.
Hmm.
Another thing. She speaks in glowing terms of a novel called Perfidious Passion. Now, the hero of this work, Sir Jason Carteret, tends to kick the heroine with his riding boots on.
And she puts up with it.
Oh, she loves it.
And Miss Fitch approves of this.
Well, she does, and it's also Sir Jason's custom, from time to time, to fetch her the old blow with his gauntlet, just to let her know who's in charge.
Good Lord. And you think that's the kind of man Miss Fitch wants?
I do.
You don't feel that if a fella had a nice singing voice and was gentle and devoted?
I do not.
I see. But this kicking business, I mean, to start with, not quite me, is it? Just the same, I would like you to speak to her on my behalf. I shan't give up yet.
I saw a little hope of success, but since the young man had asked, I felt I must at least make an attempt. My chance came the next day here on the terrace. I came upon Clarice Fitch sitting moodily reading a copy of the Explorer's Monthly. As I approached, she hurled it down in disgust.
Drat! Amelia Earhart's got him first across the Kalahari. I'd have done that if Vickers weren't so beastly slow with my plane.
Miss Fitch, good afternoon.
Oh, hello.
Do I gather you've been pre-empted?
It doesn't matter. There are plenty more deserts and oceans once I get airborne again. Just as long as I'm first across the Pacific.
May I sit down?
Please do. I'd be glad of someone to talk to. I joined this club for the social life, but it's about as lively as Pharaoh's too.
I'm sorry we fall short of your hopes.
I expect it's my fault. Waiting for the plane, I'm getting bored.
Perhaps you'd enjoy yourself more if you were married.
Married? To one of these local stiffs, do you mean?
You're not attracted by the young bloods of Prior's Heath?
Young what? They're all human rabbits. Listen, do you think novelists draw their characters from real people?
Well, some do and some don't.
I was reading chapter 26 of that book last night. There's a meet, and Lady Pamela rides over hounds. And Sir Jason catches her a juicy one with his riding crop just where it would make her think of it. Now, if I knew a man like that, things would be different.
I know a man in this vicinity who loves you fondly.
I know 50. And to which of these jellyfish do you refer?
Ernest Pym.
Oh,
Golly, the trees bird.
Pardon?
My aunt foolishly let him into our house last night. Before I got rid of him, he'd managed to get to the piano and sing Only God Can Make a Tree.
Did he?
He did.
Pity.
Mm. Furthermore, he's the worst yeser in a neighbourhood congested with yes-men. Weedy little brute. He looks like a shrimp with dyspepsia. I'm afraid you have mentioned the one man on this earth I wouldn't marry to please a dying grandfather.
My heart sank. I was stunned that Ernest Pym should have committed that mad folly at the piano. Now, since the deed had been done, I didn't refer to it when I reported back to Ernest Pym that afternoon. I found him practising chip shots near the Septons, and apart from the trees aberration, I gave him a pretty full account of Miss Fitch's views.
Weedy little brute, did she say?
Yeah, that's right. A weedy little brute.
A shrimp.
With dyspepsia.
And she wouldn't marry me to please a dying uncle.
Grandfather.
I see. Well, it looks as if I haven't much chance.
Very little as things stand.
I shall thrust her image from my mind. Immerse myself in work. Stay longer at the office.
Just more averages.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, there is always golf.
Ah, indeed, there is always golf. Mm. They say you're in the running for the summer medal.
Do they?
Yeah, they do. Oh. Just practice hard and anything's possible.
The trouble is, I've always felt that half the fun of winning something would be telling one's grandchildren about it. Now it seems there won't be any.
Oh, nonsense, my boy. There'll be other opportunities. You'll meet some homely little woman with a modest handicap.
No, never. If I can't win Clarice Fitch, I'm out of the race. Well, it's golf, golf, golf for me from now on. Here, watch this.
Good shot, sir. Ernest Pym placed a beautiful chip on the green. Alas, not all his shots were as good. And when I spoke of his chance at the summer medal, I confess I did so more to give the young man an interest in life than because I really fancied his chances. It was a strong field that year, with at least three men likely to beat him. Arthur Jukes for one, Ralph Bingham for another, and above all, Wilberforce Bream, the likely favourite. Still, Pym was as good as his word. He practised every moment when he was not being called on to adjust averages, and clearly he was becoming a better player and a finer person. Now, this was proved by an incident that occurred the day before the medal contest. I was enjoying a quiet smoke on the terrace when Clarice Fitch came out of the clubhouse, and plainly somewhat miffed. There was a frown on her lovely forehead, and steam seemed to issue from her finely chiselled nostrils, as with a cartoon bull. She threw herself into the chair next to mine, and sat simmering gently till ready.
Miserable, undersized microbe.
What else can you mean?
Your chum, Ernest Pym, that's who. The nerve of the wretched glass-eyed insect.
Oh, dear me. What has young Pym done to incur such wrath?
For some reason, my aunt finds him almost tolerable. So, when she was stuck for an escort, I thought he'd do. Well, I rang and told him to take her to this matinee tomorrow. And would you believe it, he actually refused.
What, tomorrow? My dear girl, tomorrow's the day of the summer medal competition.
You mean Pym turned us down just so he can stay here fooling around with golf balls?
So saying, Clarice Fitch rose and stormed off, fuming like an Oriental queen having trouble with the domestic staff. I resumed my cigar with an uplifted heart. I was proud of Ernest Pym. At last, he'd remembered that he was a man and a real golfer. I felt that all he needed now was to win the summer medal, and the thrall in which Clarice held him would be broken forever. I was delighted when I woke up next morning to find the weather fine and the breeze mild. Ideal conditions for Ernest Pym. At 2 p.m., I walked with him to the first tee, and he was in fine fettle. Confidence gleamed from his spectacles, and his tweed cap was set at an angle that could almost be called jaunty.
Give it a good firm tea. There we are.
Best of luck, my boy.
Thanks. Right. Here we go.
Oh, well done. Straight down the middle.
Let's hope I can keep it up.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Now, Pim, you'll have to excuse me. I'd like to follow you round, but I'm a touch of lumbago today.
Oh, sorry to hear that, sir.
Oh, it's nothing, but I'm sure you'll forgive me if I go and find an armchair. I'm bound to be kept informed of your progress.
Of course. Thanks for getting me started.
As Ernest Pym strolled towards the first green, he had the look of a man of purpose, like Columbus off to discover America. I began to feel that he might really pull it off. For my part, I retired to the smoking room. I may have dozed off, for play was well advanced when Freddie Bassett came in, flushed from the sun and clearly bursting with news.
Young Pym's playing the game of his life. He's three strokes clear at the moment.
Oh, and what about the favourites?
Oh, it's a good day for the bookies. Bingham's right off his game. He'll be lucky to break 90.
And Jukes?
Oh, Jukes was going well till he hit trouble in the rough at the ninth. He got into a casual sardine tin and took 10. Now he's gone to pieces.
We must try not to laugh. And Wilberforce Bream, how's he faring?
Oh, the worst. He put 3 in the water at the lake hole, and he's torn up his card and gone home.
Oh. You know, it's odd business, our 3 aces all off form at the same time.
Oh, it's no coincidence. I hear the Fitch girl turned all 3 down, one after the other, during the course of yesterday evening.
Ah.
You know what a broken heart can do to a young man's game.
Indeed, almost as bad as lumbago. Oh,
God knows why they ever let that woman in the first place. She knows nothing about golf. She's walking round on the links now, not watching the play, just taking exercise.
Well, I hope she doesn't distract Ernest Pym.
Oh, unlikely, I'd say. He's playing like a man possessed. Now that the Tigers are off the map, I'm backing him to win.
Good man.
There's just one dark horse. Young Ramsden Wood has suddenly turned it on. Well, I must get back and see how Pym copes with the 12.
I resolved to defy the twinges in my back and return to the links for the closing stages. The lumbago had been much eased by the application of an old Scottish remedy taken internally, and I decided another glass might be beneficial. I closed my eyes to meditate on life and golf, and I must have dozed again, for when I opened them, the sun was perceptibly lower. The early finishers were already back in the clubhouse, and none was contending for the prize. The word was that it was a 2-horse race between Pym and Ramsden Wood. I made my way out to see the end of the match, but was checked on the veranda by an alarming spectacle. Clarice Fitch was approaching, and once more rage was written all over her classic features. In addition, she appeared to be walking with difficulty. Oh, Miss Fitch, has something happened? You're limping.
You'd limp if some maniac had hit you with a hard ball.
What?
Completely irresponsible. I was strolling along, enjoying the air, and I stopped to tie my shoelace.
Uh-huh.
Well, suddenly something came whizzing along like a bullet and struck me.
Oh, good heavens, where?
Never mind.
I mean, where did this happen?
Well, down in the field, there.
You mean the 18th fairway?
Is that what you call it?
Was a man driving off the tee?
He was standing on a sort of grass platform, if that's what you mean.
What did he say when he came up to you?
He hasn't come up to me yet, but when he does, he'll regret it. Just give me 2 minutes to rub in some arnica and powder my nose, and I'm going to get back to deal with that wretched little pimple.
Ah, was it by any chance Ernest Pym who did this?
It was.
I'm sorry.
Not half as sorry as he'll be when I finish with him. His head's not much to look at, but it'll fit very nicely on our dining room wall.
As Clarice Fitch limped indoors, I hurried to the 18th fairway. Pym had to be told that an angry explorer was lying in wait, one whose bite might well be fatal. As I approached, I saw Pym studying his ball, which lay about 80 yards short of the green. When I got close, Pym looked up and blinked at me inquiringly, and I noted with surprise that his face was totally devoid of glass.
Oh, it's you.
Oh, yes, it is indeed.
Didn't recognize you at first. Broke my glasses at the 15th, and I can't see much, unless it's close.
Oh, my dear chap, so you're out of the running.
Out of the running? I should say not. I've been going like a train. Not seeing properly seems to help me concentrate.
Oh, that's remarkable.
Well, knowing I can't follow the ball, I don't lift my head, you see. And as I can play this course from memory, I think I've got the medal in the bag.
Really?
Bassett tells me the Wood has finished in 75 and leads by 3 strokes. There's no one behind me, and I'm on 72.
So, do this last hole in 2 more strokes, and you won.
Exactly. Mind you, I should stand even better. This drive was on its way to the green when some bally sheep got in the way and stopped it here.
Sheep... You say?
Yeah, fancy letting sheep stroll around the course. If it hadn't been for that, I'd be on the green already and on my way to 73.
Yes, but I think I ought to tell you...
Still, that... a couple more strokes should sink this blighter.
I had intended to warn the young man that what he'd hit was not a sheep but an angry tigress. Now I reconsidered. To signal the lurking danger might put Pym off his game. And he was going well. Why not let him finish quickly? Better to alert him once he'd sunk the winning putt. And he might then effect a quick getaway. After all, though Clarice Fitch had spoken of emerging from the ladies' cloakroom in 2 minutes, par for that particular course was normally near a 10. So I said nothing, and watched as Pym played a nice mashie shot onto the green.
Oh, well played, sir.
Where did it go?
Well, it's on the green, but it's a little wide of the pin.
How wide?
Possibly 15 feet.
Ha ha, that'll be easy. I've been laying 15 footers dead all afternoon.
Would that Pym had never uttered these words. Confidence is a fine thing in the game, but it should be unspoken confidence. The gods of golf lie in wait for the presumptuous. Pym walked boldly to his ball for the putt that would win him the medal. I stood by the hole to give his limited vision something to aim at, but, of course, he knew the lay by heart, struck his ball neatly and firmly along the right line. I was confident of a happy ending as it made straight for the hole, but then, as I held my breath, it started to hesitate, and barely an inch from the cup it stopped. Stony-faced Pym strode up and tapped it in for 75.
Oh, hard luck, old man. Still, you've tied the match. You'll have to play off for the medal tomorrow.
And all because of that infernal sheep. If someone will lead me to the blasted animal, I shall prepare it for gravy and mint sauce with my own hands.
Pym, my boy, I think you should know that it was not a sheep that intercepted your ball.
Not a sheep? What was it, then? A dog? A yak?
Not a sheep, not a dog, nor any other four-legged friend. It was, in fact, a spectator.
By Jupiter! A spectator? Someone who should know better? You mean some subhuman idiot strolled across the 18th fairway at the height of the medal contest? Well, of all the... Oh!
A flood of anger swept the young man's face and words failed him. Some physical outlet for his wrath seemed essential, and he hurled his putter from him as far as it would go. And now the gods of golf, who were clearly having a field day, intervened again. Unseen by us as we watched the ball, the vengeful Clarice Fitch had been approaching fast, and she'd just reached the edge of the green when Pym's putter struck her squarely on the shin bone. She let out a shrill scream and toppled backwards down a small slope. Pym was horrified.
My God, what was that? Did I hit someone?
Yes, I'm rather afraid you did.
Oh, it sounded like a woman.
It was Clarice Fitch.
Clarice? I hit Clarice Fitch with my putter. Well, quick, I must go to her.
The young man was distraught, as any young man might be who seems to have crippled the girl he loves. For it was obvious from Pym's reactions that Clarice was still his heart's desire. And he rushed across to the place from which he'd heard her cry. He reached it just as the wounded aviatrix pulled herself back to the edge of the green and stood ruefully rubbing her leg. Remember that Pym was still without benefit of his glasses, and as he flung out both arms to comfort her, His right fist caught her a telling blow in the face, and down she went again. There was a tense silence as Ernest Pym stood transfixed with horror, while Clarice Fitch pulled herself upright for the second time, and then she said something amazing.
Oh, Ernest, can you ever forgive me?
Forgive you?
All right, I know it won't be easy, but when I was beastly to you, I thought you were a mouse. I had no idea that underneath you were a raging lion. I thought that blow with a ball was an accident, but now I know what you're really made of. Oh, Ernest, I'll be your slave forever.
And so, Basil, that's how the couple came to enter the tournament of life together. Ernest Pym, having won the medal the next day, recognized the rich vein of luck he'd stumbled upon and schooled himself to be masterful. This demeanor did wonders for his professional life, and I gather that last year he was elected Grand Master of the Worshipful Company of Average Adjusters.
But Clarice Fitch, what of her flying career?
Ah, when they married, she gave it up. She left the first crossing of the Pacific to Amelia Earhart, with sad consequences for that good lady.
Well, I'm blowed. Whatever next?
Oh, thank you, Basil. How about another bottle of this excellent Chablis?
Every night, he'd sing of his awful flight. Oh, the dirty little Bill went rolling down the hill and rolled right into a bunker. From there to the green, I took 13, and then, by gosh, I sunk her.
There's Always Golf was narrated by Morris Denham in the role of the oldest member. Ernest Pym was played by Michael Fenton Stevens, Clarice by Helen Atkinson Wood, Basil Wagstaff by Alan Thompson, and Bassett by David Simeon. The Oldest Member is adapted by Edward Taylor and Michael Poynton from stories by P.G. Woodhouse and produced by Edward Taylor.
From him it never parted. Once he heard a shot, believe it or not, that came right back where it started.